take the scenic drive to the Guitar Oasis Cool in Jefferson County. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, jeffsguitar.com.
Welcome to another podcast at slysoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like Madison Computer Work, St. Vincent de Paul, S&R Remodeling, AMS, and the Axley Law Firm. Joining us now from the 2nd District, Congressman Mark Pocan, who is a Democrat from, I don't know, what is it, the town of Vermont now? Somewhere out there where the deer and the antelope play.
Yes, the town of Vermont.
Okay, good. Okay, well, you've made a couple of interesting statements over the last couple of weeks. I'm going to play this. This is your floor speech on the Republicans, Trump care, Ryan care, don't care, whatever they called it. Here it is.
And that's the legend of the Trojan horse. So what is the moral of that story, and why am I reciting Greek lore on the floor of Congress today? Well, because history has a way of repeating itself. Today, we have our own Trojan horse, a so-called GOP healthcare bill, Trump Care, that professes to be about healthcare, but in reality is a Trojan horse to give tax breaks to the wealthiest in the country. Let's take a serious look at it. We're told it's the replacement to the Affordable Care Act, a bill that has offered insurance to over 20 million people in this country. Now, that replacement is supposed to fix the problems of the Affordable Care Act and ensure healthcare for everyone, as promised by President Trump. But the covert part of Trump Care was that he got busted last week when the Congressional Budget Office, our nonpartisan agency that evaluates bills, said that in reality the bill does little to improve health care. And in fact, it said 24 million people would lose access to health care, not gain it.
Now, I didn't play the whole clip of your Greek mythology statement, but you do understand when you use analogies like that, Glenn Grothman has to go back to his mother's house and get an explanation.
Well, I mean, you know, this is the problem, right? We all know Paul Ryan desperately wants to do tax reform for the wealthiest in this country, and he tried to do a twofer, repeal the Affordable Care Act and give $600 billion to his best buddies, the wealthiest in the country, and insurance companies and big pharma, and that's what he did. The problem is we saw it, how well it did. It died a terrible public death. But, you know, we wanted to make sure people understood that there was more to it than what they were saying. And I think, you know, ultimately, the public really got it, made a lot of calls, and we beat it back.
I've been watching members of the Freedom Caucus. Do you think they have any sort of intellectual high ground in this debate?
Well, I mean, they've been consistent in that they don't believe in government, right? So the odd part is why they ever chose to run for political office to run government if you don't believe in it. I mean, so there's been that fundamental disconnect. But they are consistent on most things they do go back to they don't believe in government. And if they don't believe in a health care plan that's, you know, put together by the federal government, even though it's with insurance companies, then, you know, they're consistent in saying they just wanted to completely repeal it, period. And I guess I'd give them the points for the consistency, not necessarily the logic, but the consistency.
But when you've got a party that at one end of the spectrum wants 24 million people cut off of their health care, and on the other end of the spectrum, you've got people who are don't want pre-existing conditions covered or maternity coverage or any of the other things that are in the Affordable Care Act. Boy, that's a pretty narrow swatch of Americans that believe in those things.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the fact that somehow they're going to get the farther right wing of the Republican Party to vote for it because they're going to take away things that would be covered by your insurance, like pharmaceutical drugs and emergency care and maternal care, would be a way to pick up votes. It is just crazy, right? I mean, they're going to make the bill even worse than dropping 24 million people off of their health insurance. And that's the kind of conversations they're having. And we're hearing they're still meeting. And even this week, potentially, although it's less likely now, that they could try to pull a vote so they can still claim they did a repeal of the Affordable Care Act before they go home. I think what they're realizing is this is just really difficult public policy to do if you really believe that certain things are truisms in healthcare, and that, you know, there's tens of millions of people who have access because of the bill, and it's not easy just to take that away.
So the White House's response to all this has been first to lash out at you and other Democrats. Then they lashed out at Paul Ryan via Judge Jeanine Pirro on the Fox News Channel. And now they're lashing out at the Freedom Caucus.
Everyone's fault but theirs.
Huh? It's everyone's fault but theirs. It's my understanding that the president did no due diligence, took no time to learn the issue, understand it, or even seize on the details. He didn't address the American public on it. When he went out to give speeches, he was talking more about Arnold Schwarzenegger than he was health care. Doesn't he bear some responsibility?
Well, and one more thing to add. So, yes, he never really understood the bill. He thought he could get away with saying it's going to be wonderful, it's going to be great, and that would be enough to put out there, which clearly, you know, is ridiculous, especially in hindsight. But I was also told by Republicans that he was flying Tea Party members to Mar-a-Lago to try to get them to vote for it. So it's a bigger failure for him, because not only did he not understand it and not understand to sell it to the American people or do any of the other things you're supposed to do, but the people he talked to didn't get persuaded by him. So that's one of the parts that's not really out there. But he had a big, big failure himself on that.
How could Republicans sabotage the Affordable Care Act right now? I do understand that there are problems with it. They've been sabotaging it for a while now, and the insurance companies have been sabotaging it. What could they do here in the next year or so that you're concerned about?
Well, not try to address the things that everyone knows we need to address. So in other words, let it wither on the vine and create more problems. When, you know, if you know you've got a problem, if you've got a leaking tire, you put air in it. You don't throw away the tire. And I think that's the problem. Is I think they're going to just let it go ahead and flatten and then try to keep driving on it. So, I think we know that there are some actuarial issues. We know there's some issues around the risk corridors. We know there are some things that you could do relatively easily to fix it so that it's more sustainable. And I think there may be a potential that they'll do nothing and hope that it just fails, so then they can try to blame it. The problem is, you know, in politics, as you know, there's a last touched, you own it, and they've touched this last. So I think that they have to be careful that under that strategy, they're going to assume the American people won't remember this failure they just went through and that they're not somehow responsible.
You know, if the Democrats ever got control of Congress or the Senate again, I don't know if that'll be in my lifetime, but is this healthcare issue becoming the issue that nobody's going to want to ever touch? I mean, Democrats paid a huge, huge price for the Affordable Care Act. Maybe it was the timing of the recession. Maybe it was the timing of Citizens United. Maybe it was the timing of gerrymandering. It was a whole bunch of things converged that Democrats paid a huge, huge, huge price for. Is anybody going to want to touch healthcare ever again?
So, you know, I think one of the interesting things is today I saw a list of sponsors of John Conyers' single-payer health care bill, and I was told it's going to be significantly more sponsors than they've ever had before. So I think one of the things we're realizing is that people are watching a little closer and realizing, well, okay, fine, if this bill's got its problems and the Republican bill's going to throw tens of millions of people off of health care, why don't we just offer health care? And I think because people are more active and reaching out to us more than ever, I think more members are getting those calls. So that seems to have translated into more sponsors for that bill, and I think it might open up the debate in a way that it hasn't been opened up previously.
Have progressive groups taken a look at healthcare systems around the world? And obviously, whether it be the Canadian system, the French system, the British system, the Irish system, any country that has some sort of either single payer or government healthcare, all those systems have shortcomings. None to the extent that the U.S. system has. The U.S. system spends more money for less healthcare, which is not good. That we could come up with something that solves some of those problems, and that when we put something into place, when we have an opportunity, we actually are able to deliver on some of people's concerns that have seen other systems that have their shortcomings.
You know, I think a lot of people are looking at, first of all, fixes that you can do to a current system that's in place, because we need to do that, which, again, I'm not sure if the Republicans will go there. But then I think we are starting to, again, broaden that conversation to what you said, as well as the single-payer and Medicare for All models that are out there, because now may be the opportunity. If we're saying neither of these systems is perfect, well, then what would be a better system? And at least we're having a debate that I can tell you we haven't had for the last 4 years that I've been here.
Right. Well, because former Congressman Steve Kagan, you know, his whole big thing has been about transparency on pricing so people can shop, which is an interesting component. And I'm almost wondering sometimes whether conservatives might go for some aspect of that. But it's pretty simple for me that when we really started running into problems with our healthcare system and the delivery of insurance is when the insurance companies demutualized and started putting more money into their shareholders' pockets than in actually covering people's health care.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that's a whole other program sometime when you get to shareholders.
But isn't that a big problem?
Yeah, but I'll tell you, there's a whole thing around antitrust that I'm also working on, that I'm in a learning process. But let's just say when we change the antitrust laws, but I don't know, how many decades ago, we really made it why we have terrible customer service from big corporations and why we have consolidations within industries and why they're taking their compensation in certain ways, because it's a very few people who are benefiting. So quite honestly, at some point we need to talk about
antitrust. Well, good. I look forward to having a conversation with you on antitrust laws, because, you know, as we see Oscar Mayer about to be shuttered after 100-some years, and you see a Brazilian group and Warren Buffett coming in and merging two fast food conglomerates like that, I have a lot of questions about antitrust laws.
Yep, and it's like, this is part of a future of work thing that I've been doing. We started doing a bunch of meetings in D.C. We've met in California. I have four members of Congress from around the country coming over the Easter break to Dane and Rock counties, where we're doing some conversations with the UW and with some labor folks in Rock County. We're talking about the future of work and labor, and a lot of this has come into conversations around antitrust.
Congressman Mark Pocan with us. It's LizaOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who's going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
We're back with Congressman Mark Pocan. He is a Democrat from Madison, obviously. We're talking about a number of issues. All right, so your Trojan horse Greek mythology floor statement was fascinating. You were also on Sirius Network on, I don't know, some guy named Michelangelo's show or something. Here is a comment that you made on that program.
Some of it is in the classified version of the report that the 17 intelligence agencies put together, and some of that hasn't come out yet. I think some of it's been coming out because of great, you know, journalism. A lot of people doing investigations, like when we found out about Jeff Sessions lying to Congress, that came out because of good journalism. And I think you're going to keep seeing things come out. But yes, there are things that I know just that I've read in classified reports that I'm sure will still come out that will continue to be damning evidence when it comes to this relationship between the Russian trying to influence our elections and ultimately, I think, you know, the Trump campaign's potential coordination on it.
You have seen classified information that you believe will be damning against the president or his campaign operatives?
More damning evidence about Russia's influence in the election. And I think that's leading us to the second part, which is, as I think Adam Schiff, the Democrat and the head of Intelligence Committee, said, this strong circumstantial and likely more evidence between collusion between the campaign and other operatives within the Trump world.
Well,
but what I've seen specifically relates to additional evidence about Russian interference in the election.
Russian interference in the election.
Yeah.
What did you make of the story in the Washington Post Not sure if that was the original source about Eric Prince, formerly of Blackwater, brother of our education secretary, meeting in, where was it, Dubai?
Meeting, somewhere in the Middle East.
Meeting in the Middle East with some sort of back channel setup to be a back channel intermediary for Donald Trump with Vladimir Putin.
Or was this the islands? Anyway, there's another one. It's hard to keep track. Yeah, it might be. But anyway, what we keep finding out is more people affiliated with the Trump campaign and the Trump world, and including his own family members and cabinet selections, seem to have this rather high preponderance of contacts with Russian spies and other people from Russia within the government. And it just has kind of this drip, drip, drip. What I have said all along, just the Wisconsin common sense test, is if you read a classified report by 17 agencies that clearly says the Russians influenced, tried to influence our elections, and the attempt was to get Donald Trump elected, and that happened, and the immediate response from Donald Trump is to lift sanctions, tells me there's a great disconnect between those reports and the actions of the president, and something else is in between yet to be found out. And then when you start seeing all the connections between these people talking to Russian officials and others with connections to Putin, I just think eventually what it looks like to me this pattern is going to show is that I think they likely knew about this along the way and likely probably did some coordination with this during the campaign. And if so, then, you know, we have a real question to deal with, which is, you know, not only did a foreign country try to interfere with our elections, but very likely the person who won's campaign might have been involved in knowing about it and possibly even more.
So this dossier that was put out by this British spy that came out.
Yeah, and I barely even refer to that one. While there's been some things proven true in that, I'm not even referring to that one.
Well, it is interesting that his comments there were the projection that in the future, Donald Trump, one of the things Donald Trump would be asked to do would be to criticize NATO. Well, guess what Donald Trump started doing?
Right.
Criticizing NATO in a way that no other American president had ever done. So much of this is so peculiar, and I have to tell you, I've seen the videos of what Viktor Yanukovych's forces did in the Ukraine to people innocently, peacefully demonstrating on the streets of Kiev. This Paul Manafort being a wingman for a brutal dictator like that who absconded with a very poor country's resources, that's pretty troubling. And the fact that he would have that access, and from what I understand, still does have access to Donald Trump.
Well, and Flynn.
He's fine. No. You're being unfair. Michael Flynn has been he's been an honest player throughout this situation.
Yes, clearly. Every time I mention a name, you're going to have multiple stories that tie it back to someone in Russia. I don't know anyone who knows that many spies. The only Russian spies I ever knew were Natasha and Boris, and yet here these folks seem to run across them every time they go out for dinner. Something just doesn't pass the smell test.
Carter Page. The story's coming out about Carter Page now.
Great answer he gave, right? I mean, the fact that Trump is quoting from real fake news put out by the Soviets and then, using that as part of his stump speeches. I mean,
it's pretty remarkable. So do you know this Devin Nunes? Does his elevator go all the way to the top? What's going on there?
I think he may be digging the hole so deep that he doesn't quite know how to get out of it, and he just keeps digging and not realizing that's not getting him out of the hole, because clearly he's made it impossible for the Intelligence Committee in the House to have any investigation under their control, which is why we've been saying all along it should be an independent commission dealing with this.
But who's going to hold Paul Ryan accountable if he does not remove him as chairman of that committee?
And we keep pushing that as an issue, because I think that is very important that we push, because you're right. I mean, the accountability on Nunes, if it doesn't happen from himself, has to happen from the speaker.
There's probably a lot that we're missing because Donald Trump sucks up so much oxygen. You know, the Gorsuch situation is on the Senate side. What are we not hearing about that we should be because of the Trump effect?
On Gorsuch, I mean, I think.
Well, no, I don't mean on Gorsuch. Okay. I mean on anything. I just put the Gorsuch thing as aside, and that the Senate's dealing with that. But
just the fact that Trump is so good at trying to distract from whatever is going on. I'm not sure if I understood the lie.
Well, all right. For instance, Donald Trump promised that he was going to renegotiate NAFTA. He was going to do these other things. What's going on with that? I haven't heard anything about that for a while. Is he reneging on that? Is Paul Ryan ever going to let him renegotiate NAFTA?
Well, that's the thing. He's doing very little, mostly talk and little action, and it's been fairly quiet at the end of last week. He did a few things that try to show that he was, again, checking another box. I honestly think everything he does is to check a box he said he's going to do, and he doesn't really care about what he did or probably understand to the full level of what he's doing, but he just wants to check a box because he said he was going to do it, which is part of why sometimes you like someone who has a little experience to be in government because they actually get it. In this case, you know, he thinks if he just touches it or says it, that's good enough. And in reality, I think a lot of people in Wisconsin and across the country thought he gave some pretty good answers on trade, voted for him because of it, and in the end, we're seeing that's not true.
What are you doing with trade right now?
We've been meeting and trying to kind of figure out what's the progressive response, and I think we're trying to put together something fairly holistic to show what the future of trade should be, working with people like Lori Wallach over at Public Citizen and others, trying to deal with this global trade watch.
Donald Trump's assertion has been that the problem was is that we had multi-country trade deals like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and if you just did them one-on-one, you wouldn't have the problems that we do in the inequity and trade deficit that we have. That doesn't seem like that gets to the root of the problem to me.
Well, it's yes and no. It's yes on the superficial, right? I mean, it's hard to have the Trans-Pacific Partnership with Canada and Vietnam in the same trade agreement because they're very different trading partners. But where it doesn't get at it, but all the details actually matter. I mean, just because you have an agreement with Canada and an agreement with Vietnam separately, you still have to have the right stuff in a trade deal, and that's the part that he hasn't really addressed. And I think that's where, again, you know, he understands the superficial of it, which is, you know, he's got to say he's going to address it, and you can address it through separate agreements better, I would agree, than one big agreement, but you actually have to have content as well.
Are we making any progress? You know, he's got a budget. He's got a budget which looks really unpopular. We have the initial rush of condemnation about Meals on Wheels, about cutting Great Lakes restoration 100%. There are a whole lot of bad things in there.
Pell grants,
right.
The NIH funding, National Institute of Health, you know, go down the list. And I think, again, that's his proposal that, again, not knowing how government works, sounds like he can just decree it will happen, but the difficult part is now getting members of Congress, including on appropriations that I serve on, who we just added funding to a National Institute of Health, and for him to take away that much funding, you're going to have to convince people to do that, and it's not that easy to make people suddenly flip and do something different.
What do you think is going to happen in this tax bill?
I think taxes are far harder to get done. I remember I heard Scarborough on Morning Joe say, oh, they should have did tax reform first. It would have been easier. I disagree. I mean, healthcare is a huge part of the economy, but tax reform, I would argue 20% of the meetings I have in my office are about somebody trying to protect their piece of tax reform. And my staff said they even have more meetings about that. So clearly, you know, it's going to be difficult to do a comprehensive tax reform, and I know it's on their list, but, you know, I think from what I understand, they're going to start on corporate tax reform, so they're still not going to deal with it for middle-class families, but they're going to make sure that corporations get their rate lowered first, and then, you know, the spillover, the backwash, so to speak, might be middle-class families.
Finally, one of your colleagues, is it Representative Bass?
Karen Bass?
Yeah, from New Hampshire? Is it New Hampshire?
Oh, no. No, she's California, Karen Bass.
One of the representatives said that her job has gone from being a congressperson to being a counselor, that people are literally so upset about what's happening in Washington with this president and this Congress that they're emotionally ill. What I'm wondering is are you finding that? Are you finding people that are literally distraught over this president that are your constituents?
You know, there are people who are distraught, but I would say, you know, if anything, my job has turned into a community organizer, in that I'm trying to help connect people to groups that are working on the issues that they think are in trouble the most, and I'm trying to convince them to reach out to members of Congress and try to convince them to be more active in the right way for the things they care about. So in many ways, you know, I find myself trying to connect people with common interests so that their voices are magnified. And that seems to be, you know, my second job these days.
So you almost feel as though this is an opportunity in some respect.
Oh, absolutely. I'm extremely optimistic. If we can keep this level of engagement and the successes we've had, I mean, you know, as much as everyone says the Tea Party is what killed the Affordable Care, or the American Health Care Act, the Republicans' Trump Care bill, the reality is the calls that people in swing Republican districts and the moderates were just as an important part why they couldn't get it done, because they didn't have those votes on the other side. So, and that's because of the calls. So people kind of forget that if it wasn't for everyone doing their activism, that also may not have failed, and that's an important part. And the fact that we beat back a labor secretary nominee, that we stopped them from gutting ethics laws for members of Congress, we stopped them from introducing bills to sell 2.5 million acres of public land off. I mean, this is all successes people have had, and I think we just have to continue showing people how to be even more effective with the voice they have. And if they do that, you know, I think this could turn out to be a really big silver lining.
Congressman Mark Pocan from the 2nd District of Wisconsin, thanks for coming to SlySawfish.com.
Absolutely, Sly. Thank you.
Brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SlySawfish.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.